Do you need a realtor in Central Texas?
Of course you do. We all need a realtor in Central Texas. Even those of us who live in Dallas or Houston or San Francisco or Denver, Colorado, you need to go to Central Texas anyway. And the reason is Laura Baker is a fantastic realtor. She's great at what she does. She's a member of the elite Andy Allen team for Keller Williams. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. Talk with Laura if you're thinking about putting your house on the market. This is a great time to get market comps. If you're looking to buy in the market, you need all the help you can get. Call Laura, and it's 512-784-0505.
Welcome to the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast. I'm joined by the great Randy Boone, who went and attended the Texas triumph in the Big 12 championship over Oklahoma State. So, Randy, I want to get your sense of the feel of the game in Arlington in Jerry World. But also, I want to affirm that you're the better Texas fan of the two of us because you made the journey. You drove up from Yoakum in your truck. You got up there, took your comped ticket because you're an athlete. You're not used to paying for anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Your whole life, people have just given you everything, Randy.
Free stuff everywhere. Although there was free stuff, so that was good.
There you go. So, hey, sounds like you had a great time. I know you got to hang out with one of our sponsors, Mr. Gabe Winslow.
I did. Gabe treated me well. Him and his son. I think he had a pretty good time as well.
Yeah, well, Gabe confided in me. He was really excited that his son had not been interested in sports, really. He's 11. He gets restless, gets bored, leaves the room, whatever. He said at one point he turned to his dad and said, "I love you, Dad. Thank you for bringing me to this. This is amazing."
Yeah.
And Gabe was like, "Oh, man. Like,
yeah,
this no, is he, all worth it."
Yeah. No, he had a big time. You could tell he enjoyed it. It was really cool to see him interact and everything. But yeah, you can tell that once we sat down and the game got going and everything, he was like, this is cool.
It's a spectacle, man.
You know, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
It makes an impression on a kid. I think he loved that everyone booed Brett Yormark. I think he loved, like when you're a kid, you respond to like emotion from adults. Like, why are the adults acting like this? Like, it's kind of exciting, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Now the questions and everything were cool to hear. Like, just I kind of flashing back on when I was little, like it'd be stuff that I would ask. And it was cool to see them too, get to experience that together. It was a neat deal.
That is cool, man. Yeah. You know, did you happen to see that email I forwarded you?
I did. That was, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. So
thanks to that guy. And obviously sorry for his loss. And if we can bring one shred of normalcy or, you know, give you a small escape or whatever, then I mean, that's certainly, certainly something that I take some pride in.
Yeah. Well, what Randy's referring to is a listener to EGAT. Wrote me a really nice message. I won't share his name because he didn't give me permission to do so. But he was someone like many of us who sports are a part of his connectedness with his father and his family. And that's something he shared with his dad. Whenever Texas would have a big win, they'd get on the phone, they'd talk, they'd text, and he lost his father. And he said, you know, hey, listen to the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast. It fills a little bit of that void. And you guys don't know me, but I really appreciate what you do. And, you know, I feel like we're all part of a big family and hey man, right back at you. You're exactly right. That's how we feel too.
No, absolutely. And if you ever are around a game and you catch wind of either one of us being there, then we'd definitely love to meet you and say hi and thank you for listening.
Yeah. 100%. Our listeners are the best. So thanks to all of y'all. And we've been rewarded the last few days. Not only is it enough that Texas succeed, but also that our enemies fail, Randy. That's how I feel. And Texas, as exciting and as awesome as things have been the past few days, the past weeks, they've been similarly dispiriting in Aggieland and possibly in Norman. And the most recent news out of Norman is Dylan Gabriel will not be playing in the Alamo Bowl against Arizona. So they also don't have Jeff Lebby. Maybe Jeff Lebby and Mr. Gabriel are going to be reuniting in Starkville, and Texas will see him again. But they're going to be rolling out Jackson Arnold with Seth Luttrell calling the plays. So that's going to be interesting for the Sooners in San Antonio. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, other than the fact that I think everybody that's somewhat plugged into college football could have predicted that coming from miles and miles away. I think the only question was, could Levy, I think he would rather have taken Arnold. If I were him, that would have been the move. I don't think he had the skins on the wall or anything to convince him. So he ends up with Gabriel over there, and Arnold appears to be staying. Well, I mean, you never know in this day and age, but I mean, that was very unsurprising.
Portal opened up December 4th, 2023, year of our God. Lots of names already jumping in, including about half the people that got bags from the Aggies in 2022 that made up the number one ranked recruiting class of all time, Randy.
So I missed the announcement that Robinson was going to Syracuse. And when I heard that, they left out the part that he was going to be a defensive coordinator. I was like, man, they hired him as the head coach. Wow. That's, I mean, you can't really say no to that. I mean, good for him, I guess. And then it, like, as the conversation between the Talking Heads or whatever podcast I was listening to, you know, kind of continued, it was like, oh wait, he's going to the DC. And then they got into the A&M thing or whatever. So like I said, I just hadn't really paid attention to it over the last couple of days, and whew, man, that's, I mean, we'll see how it all shakes out, but that's gotta be a pretty big blow.
Yeah, you know, here's the interesting thing. First of all, Elijah Robinson, the A&M coach, was hired as a DC. He's never called plays. He's never been a DC before. And he's going to work for his buddy, who's a DB coach at Georgia.
Yep.
And they're known for their recruiting acumen. But let me throw this out to be a little devil's advocate, Randy. In the world of NIL and the world of bag drops, do we really know who's good at recruiting and who isn't?
No, we don't. But if I were, and I understand why the people at Syracuse would make that move, but you can't assume that they're going to be able to recruit to Syracuse the way they've been able to recruit to Georgia and Texas A&M. Like, you need to go the Mississippi State route. And as you've touched on in multiple podcasts, like, you have to be an outlier. Like, you're not going to go get high profile talent to Syracuse at this point. Like, you need to be a little bit different. You need to find diamonds in the rough. Catch a couple dudes from New York that want to stay home and get lucky. But it, yeah, I mean, you're not rolling into the South with an NIL fund and talking people into going into Syracuse. Like, it's not, I've been up there and it ain't happening.
Well, that's the crazy thing is upstate New York is bleak, man. And there is no natural recruiting base. And the base that's closest to you is dominated by real football schools, Penn State, you know, Michigan, you know, just Jersey. Rutgers is actually.
Would you say Jersey? Probably.
Jersey and Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. Right? Yeah.
I mean, there's no players in Massachusetts, Maine, mm-hmm. New Hampshire, Vermont. I remember long ago I wrote a post about I was on a business trip to Maine. And this was years ago, and I was in Portland, Maine, and a beautiful area. I love Maine. The people there are awesome. Like old school New Englanders, not the Massachusetts, like not the mass holes, but they're like rural. They hunt deer. They're like, you know, like it's kind of crazy. You'll hear country music when you walk into stores, you know, in Maine. But I was up there, and God is my witness. I come back to the hotel room after my day of work or whatever, I turn on the local public access channel and it's a local high school football game. And I'm like, this is an opportunity I will not ever get again, which is to watch Maine high school football. And by God, you can look it up. There was a Division I recruit on the field, the only one on the field, named Quentin Porter, who ended up becoming the quarterback at Boston College. And I don't think he ever panned out. What's that?
I'm just saying he's just like running around like a bee on the field, just toying with people.
6'5" drop back quarterback. And his running back was a Vietnamese kid named like Truck Hung or something, who was about 5'5", 130 pounds. And when he'd hand it off, God is my witness, he would have to bend sort of over it to like hand the ball off and get it in the cradle. It was one of the funniest things I've ever witnessed. And then at one point, no bullshit, fog rolls in, like a heavy main fog where you can't see the players anymore. Literally, you cannot see the players. And so the camera's trying to follow them. And the announcers are like, and they have these great New England accents, like, Quentin Porter, back. Is it a draw? No, he's back to pass. Oh, he hit the receiver in his helmet. He couldn't even see the ball. Oh, I tell you, Frank, I never seen a game like this. Oh, I tell you, Teddy. And they're just, it's so great. I'm rolling laughing. I ended up writing a post about it just to document what I'd saw. Maybe it still exists in Barking Carnival somewhere. I'm going to have to Google it after this. But
that's awesome. God, that sounds very typical.
Oh, my God. It was amazing. And I mean, I swear to God, there was the field conditions. You know, there were 40 fans there. It was all the parents of the players. The field conditions were horrific. One of the lines on the field was crooked. The groundskeeper had screwed up the white line. So the 10 kind of bled into the goal, like the 5-yard line.
It's foggy, man. It's hard to see.
But I mean, the stands looked like they were made out of cast iron out of like a melted Revolutionary War cannon. It was amazing. I just sat there and just thought, you know what? We're losing regionalism in our country, like each region having a feel because of internet culture and TV culture and people moving around. But God, I hope we can keep some of it, because I don't want those old New Englanders to just be swallowed up by the mass holes, you know?
Yeah. Now, Portland's a hidden jewel for sure. You know, beautiful. The double A team for the Red Sox is there, so we played there multiple times. It's a really cool city. If anybody has a chance to get up there, there's a really nice harbor, and there's also a really nice downtown. They have the main mall, very tongue-in-cheekly named, is in Portland, spelled as in the state, not the word. But no, it's a cool place. It really is. I never really got to upstate Maine, but Portland's a cool spot. But yeah, I can definitely see. Yeah, you chose your names very well there with your broadcasters. I think every other person up there has named one of those two names.
Oh yeah, and so after the game, I of course I'm like, I'm not going to be in Portland, Maine again anytime soon. I'm going to a bar. So I go out, I go in a bar, and friendliest people in the world, I go to the waterfront. Maine, especially Portland, a little more rugged blue-collar town than you might think.
Oh, yeah.
And definitely. You know, that's a place where there's going to be some brawls later that night on a Friday night, right? So I go out, I'm sitting at a bar, I sidle up to this guy, and he starts chatting with me. He's fascinated that I'm from Texas, like I'm from Mars, and he's questioning me about things.
Yep.
Do you live on a ranch? I wish it had been you, because you could have been like, yeah, I kind of did grow up that way. I did ride a horse. Yeah, you know, but I'm like, no, I grew up in Austin and, you know, suburbia. We're chatting, and this guy, turns out he is a lobsterman, and I was talking to him about it, and this is before Deadliest Catch. People, you didn't really know what that was about, but it's talk about real work. That's work, man. And this guy said, we had an amazing catch. So I came in and I got paid out 14 grand for, I think, about 10 days at sea. And this guy, this was back in the 90s, by the way. So 14 grand was even more. It was worth, what's 14 grand in the 90s worth? 170,000? No, it's like, probably 20. I mean, 25.
I was gonna say 30, 35. Yeah, somewhere in there. Yeah.
I don't think inflation's that much, but yeah, 20, 25. Anyway, it's real money. He gets paid cash. He's a lobsterman. I was like, what did you do with it? He's like, you know, I got pissed for 3 days. Pissed meaning drunk.
Yep.
And then I bought an IROC. He bought an IROC.
Yeah. And the Sox were in town, so I got a game. I got a ticket to the game.
I hit up Yankee fan with a beer bottle. It was a good time.
Yeah. Bruins were there. I don't know. I think I've told you this on the podcast before, but one of the years, like the first or second day that we got to New Hampshire, we went to a bar and like, I can't remember what the trifecta was as far as like where everybody would have been in the season, but it was like the Sox, the Bruins, and the Celtics were all playing. And we got there at like 5:45 because we had, you know, early practice and everybody's trying to find apartments and whatever. And there's nobody there. Nobody's in the bar. It's like, well, it's kind of lame. I'd been there a couple years, a few years actually at that point. So I was like, oh no, it'll pick up later. And dude, my goodness, like right before game time, like people just started rolling in. It was one of the more fun nights of my life. And everybody's like, where are y'all from? Like, we're like, it's three of us at the bar. Like, none of us are from anywhere near the New England area. And we're just like, do we root against them just to be those guys?
Yeah.
And then it became very apparent that you didn't root against them just to be those guys because you would get out of there real quick.
Yeah.
So like, all right, we're definitely on the Boston side. So, but no, it was fun. I mean, they get really, really into their pro sports up there. It's definitely it's a college atmosphere in a professional realm for that kind of stuff. But no, that was one of the more fun evenings of my life.
That's a great description. Treating their pro sports like college teams. That's exactly right.
Down here, yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those deals where you don't want to be those guys because you
know
the room and you're like, we're as likely to leave through the window as the door.
Yeah.
So
yeah, a buddy of mine brought that up. He was like, do we go against them? I was like, I don't think that's a good idea. Let's just join in. How about we join in?
Also in life, I don't want to be that guy. I mean, I distinctly remember I went to the Michigan-Texas Rose Bowl in 2004, and I distinctly remember a group of Ohio State fans geared out in Ohio State gear who went to the Rose Bowl because they bought tickets in anticipation they were going to go. Ha-ha. And they went there strictly to taunt Michigan fans and yell at Texas fans about how we were going to get destroyed the next year in Columbus.
That sounds like a miserable existence.
That is they probably dropped a couple of grand.
It's a lot of money to
haters.
Yeah. A lot of money to do a little bit of trash talking that blew up in your face.
Well, speaking of trash talking and tangents, we've indulged our reputation here and done that.
Yeah.
Tell me about Arlington. Tell me about Jerry World. Tell me about the feel before we go into any parts of the game we want to tie up.
So, I mean, feel-wise, I mean, as soon as you walked in there, you were very, very aware that it was a heavily, well, obviously everybody's wearing orange, but heavily outnumbered bright orange crowd. The burnt orange probably, I think I texted you 90 to 10, but once the game got going, it kind of filled up and you got a little bit better feel on where the fan base was. But I'd say 70-30 probably is a pretty conservative estimate of where it was. I think all 100% were in awe of how terrible the national anthem was. Yourself included. I don't know who that guy was, but I wish I could have not been introduced to him. But other than that, it was great. Like as soon as that ended, but no, the atmosphere was great. Texas fans definitely brought the energy. It was loud. And it basically felt like you're at a home game. They announced a crowd of like 88,000, which kind of surprised me, which I don't know. I mean, they say it holds 100, which I mean, I know it's expandable or whatever. So I don't, maybe if they didn't open up, but I mean, it looked pretty damn full. I mean, I don't think there was, you know, 14,000 empty seats, but I don't know. I could be wrong, but, I just remember early after we got that first defensive stop, we went down and scored, and then their next offensive possession, I turned and looked at Gabe and I was like, dude, we're about to beat their ass. And I don't think there's really a point in the game where I felt really threatened other than maybe the interception where they kind of drove down and made it a little bit close. But I mean, I'll give it to Gundy. He tried about everything you could try. I mean, he switched up a bunch of stuff throughout the game. And I mean, if, I don't know if you listened to his press conference afterwards, but I think he was legitimately surprised at how good Texas actually was. Because, I mean, really, the team that he played has only played two games on film all year. One of them being Tuscaloosa and the other one being last week.
Well, to reinforce your point, he said they were a lot better in person than they were on tape. And you know what? He's right.
Yeah.
Because we got a bunch of bad tape, Randy. We've had some parts of the series where parts of the season, I should say, where we didn't look real good. And then I think the team that he saw, healthy, fired up, motivated. Frankly, Oklahoma State, I knew coming in they couldn't cover us. And I knew watching the game they couldn't cover us. So,
and this is something he mentioned in his postgame presser as well. And I noticed it live. And I'll get your opinion on it because we haven't talked about it yet. But so they rolled down in the box and played a lot more man than I expected them to. I feel like that was a not very many times over the course of Texas versus Gundy have I been like, what is he doing? But that was one of the unless they thought they were going to get home, that to me was a gross miscalculation.
I know what they were doing.
They didn't have the guys to cover us on the outside. What you got?
That was their game plan in the second half in Stillwater.
Yeah.
Blitz, force and invite long throws, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And those throws will be incomplete or they'll get a sack. Or if you try to run, you'll be running into the blitz and it'll be a negative play and everyone will freak out. Your team will panic. Your offensive line will fall apart. Quinn will fall apart. Ain't the same team, man.
It's the best viewers I've seen.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting from a production standpoint, not questionable.
Yeah.
One thing you mentioned to me being there, and I could see it somewhat on television, but you can really see it in person. You said there was just everyone was open all the time everywhere. So,
dude, and I don't mean this to sound negative, and I don't really know how to say it without it sounding negative. We scored 49 points. So he got through his progressions better than I've ever seen him. And maybe it was because I was in person and I could see it more so than what you see on TV. I had a little bit better angle. But the amount of meat that was left on the bone, I mean, we legitimately, I mean, you want to talk about taking the foot off the gas. Like, I mean, we did the equivalent of leaving two tomahawk ribeyes on the grill because we got drunk and went in the house and partied. Like, I mean, it's not like we left a little meat on the bone. Like, I mean, that could have been ugly.
That's a very specific example.
It could have been
example,
ugly.
Randy.
I've never done that. I'm just saying.
All right. Gotcha.
But I mean, the opportunity, if we wanted to there, I mean, it was there. So Sark's a nicer person than me for multiple reasons in that game. One of them being trying to quiet the crowd when your mark was getting booed. But no, I mean, we scored 49 and it could have been much, much, much worse.
Did you enjoy the wrestling introductions? Because as a spectator on the TV, we didn't get to see a lot of them. So
I didn't really know what was going on there at first. And I mean, I had an inkling that it was a your mark deal, right? But did y'all catch the thing at halftime where they interviewed like some of the lesser known wrestlers doing like part of the promo, and all of them were like, yeah, we really don't know, but the Undertaker's a Texas fan, so hook them.
Yeah.
and everybody went crazy. It's like, I don't know who these people, I don't watch wrestling anymore. I barely watched it back in the day when I was younger, but I just thought it was funny that, I mean, it's one thing to bring the Undertaker and like, you know, somebody else that was well known, but like, and I don't know, those three people may have been more well known than what that I'm giving credit for, but I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I would have thought they would have had Stone Cold Steve Austin come out with a couple of beers and smash him together, pour him on his face and ask for a hell yeah, and then the whole crowd would go, what? But you know, maybe they went for the B-roll wrestlers because they were more affordable. I don't know.
I guess.
But yeah. Undertaker, I like that. I know who that is. Yep. That's about it. He gave yours the belt.
Gave him the belt, man. Gave him the belt. But yes, to your point, I mean, Sark had things dialed up so good. I mean, at some point, I think yours was like, I mean, I'll throw it to him this time. Like, why not? They're all open.
Yeah, it almost felt democratic at some point because, you know, nine different guys caught a ball. multiple dudes caught two or three balls, right?
It was very intentional at the beginning, I feel like, because I think he was trying to attack multiple areas and get multiple people in the game just to send the message and get people in the game, you know, and do it. And then as the game went on, it just became, hey, Quinn, who do you want to throw this one to? Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say it's the best game that he's called just because I was there in person. So it's a lot easier to see, you know, people running all over the place. But I mean, he had some stuff schemed up to where it was, yeah, the primary guy's open. But by the way, if they'd have covered that, there's also two other guys running free.
Did you realize live what was happening in the last play with Jonathan Brooks? Did you even realize what was going on there?
I didn't. No, I didn't see him run out on the field. I think I probably had turned to, you know, Gabe or one of the people around us to talk about something or whatever. And by the time I knew what had happened, Manning had just like flipped him the ball, and I realized who it was. And I was like, man, that's pretty cool. Like that's, you know, former player in me coming out. Like if I would have been Brooks in that situation, that would have meant a lot to me. And you could tell it meant a lot to his teammates to have him out there. So that was a pretty cool moment for sure.
So Thursday before the game, end of practice, Sark called in the team and said, hey, we're going to win this game. We're going to win it going away. And when we're in victory formation, Jonathan Brooks is going to run out there. And the guys got all fired up, and that's exactly what they did. So Brooks wore just enough gear to be able to run out on the field. That's pretty cool.
So if you had seen the other game, like looking back on it, if you would have watched the last few games, you know, he was not in, quote unquote, a uniform.
Yeah.
And I guess you probably should have picked up on that earlier if you were smarter than me and there and looking or whatever. But you saw when Baxter made his really good run where he ran over like 27 people. And I was like, whoa, who's this guy? On the scoring run, him and Brooks had a little celebration. And when you watch that highlight, you realize Brooks is in, you know, gear and not just street clothes. But no, that was a pretty cool deal. I heard that story that you just told, that Sark called the team up and told everybody that. And then the other thing that you said Thursday, it reminded me of, he said that Sweat on Thursday caught the pass in practice cleanly, but on Friday he bobbled it.
Yeah.
And Sark was like, hey, dude, don't mess with me, man. Like, you want this play, you better catch it cleanly and don't get a penalty.
Yeah. Did the stadium just go nuts when Sweat caught it? Did they realize
he caught it? I think it took everybody a second to realize. I think it took me a second to realize. But yeah, once everybody realized what was happening, it went nuts. And then when they had their like brief little like dance party on the sideline, I think everybody, Auburn could have kicked the extra point backwards, and I don't think anybody would have noticed. I don't think anybody's paying attention.
Oh, man. I mean, honestly, man, I don't have much on the game. It was a beating, and you know, I kind of wrote about it and talked about it a little, but I don't know, anything that you want to talk about that you noticed that maybe hasn't been articulated or noticed by anyone?
There were two plays to me that really stuck out, and one of which was, I guess, almost fully executed, and Rod talked about it a little bit, but it hit me live. It's the deep ball where our corner, I think it was Brooks, right? But legitimately found the receiver, leaned into him, was in perfect position, running right next to him, ready to make a play on the ball. And then in the last 5 yards, he just freaked out.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, he had it. Oh, no. No, he completely just lost all confidence in his ability. Yeah. And it probably was pass interference, but I think because he actually got in decent position to begin with, the referee was like, oh, no, he's fine. And then he freaked out and did the hand fighting, and it was good. I mean, it wasn't egregious to begin with, but if he and our other corners can continue to build on that, that would make me a lot more comfortable with our pass defense. And I know, and once again, Rod's touched on it, like you don't have to play it that way, but it's a lot easier to play it that way than the other way. It can be played well the other way, but he did not look like he was prepared to play it well the other way. But It's like he's being coached to do it, but he just didn't trust it. So let's hope in the next, 2 to 3 weeks, we can have the ability to do that, because there's going to be more than one occasion where we're going to have to make that play against Washington, in my opinion. And then the other one, it's like, it's just so funny how games, you look back and it's like, oh, it was complete domination. But if like a couple inches, it would have went one way or the other. And I don't know if you noticed it or not, but the first throwback screen that we threw, I mean, you were through it like between the guy's thumb and his ear. He didn't even look, was just rolling one way, turned, and was like, my running back's supposed to be over there. And the Oklahoma State guy was like right by his ear. And he gets a hand on it, tips it to himself. I just remember looking at Gabe. I was like, I would have felt better if he would have like maybe took a little bit better notice of what was going on right there. But it's just, I mean, that was just kind of a microcosm of how the game went. I mean, we caught a lot of breaks and absolutely dominated them for the most part, but it's weird how like little things can, and I will, one other thing, I will give Ewers a lot of credit on the interception for not letting that turn into a pick six. I know they eventually scored, but he could have pulled up and let that guy walk in the end zone.
Any gasps when Ewers went off the field looking shaken up?
Yeah, a little bit. I think everybody, after a little bit, when you watched him walk off the field, kind of realized it was just kind of like a stinger, not a stinger, but a good shot that probably just shook him up a little bit.
Ouchie.
Yeah, one of those type deals. But yeah, originally, yeah, probably one of the greatest feel in the world, but I don't think it was a mass panic type situation.
Yeah.
Did you notice the what play was it? I think it was one of the wide receiver screens. The block that Mitchell had.
Yeah. It's wild, Randy. So
it's like it's like he listened to you on the podcast and was like, hey, this guy Paul that I've never met in my life doesn't like me very much right now, and I'm gonna fix it, damn it.
No joke. I've been on this guy's ass all the way through midseason. The last four games, he's our best blocker at wide receiver.
Yeah.
By far.
I wonder if it was like a health thing early or if it just got into him. They're like,
into him.
Yeah. But I mean, he has been not just adequate. I mean, he's been plus out there.
Yeah. It's wild. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. It's really funny. It's sometimes, I mean, look, we got professional coaches. They're seeing the same stuff we see.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
So yeah. What about Jeff Choate getting the job at Nevada? What do you think about that?
Good for him.
Yeah.
Sign of a healthy program.
Definitely a sign of a healthy program. One thing, wild thing. I've never said this on the pod, but I randomly ran into someone who went to Montana State where Jeff Choate was the head coach. He took over there and the program was in disarray. And he actually did a hell of a job. By the time he left, they went deep into the playoffs in the FCS.
I did not realize that they were 11-4 his last year.
And they were 4-0 against their bitter rivals, the Montana Grizzlies. It's called the Brawl of the Wild. Their series is called the Brawl of the Wild. And it lives up to its name because the Montana State and Montana student bodies get after it in the stands during that game. And he went 4-0 against them, which is just unheard of because Montana is sort of the older brother in that rivalry. And he is revered there. And this guy stopped me in an airport because I was wearing a Texas hat. And he said, Jeff Choate used to coach at my school. And I was like, Montana State? He's like, how'd you know that? And then we started talking and he was like, he's beloved there. He's like an amazing program builder, right? And I was like, I didn't know that. Interesting. That happened a couple of years ago, filed it away. And then I see him get up in front of Nevada. Anti-Deion approach when he spoke to the players.
So you watched the press conference and everything? I had it queued up to watch on my way home today, and I never got around to it. So
I watched pieces of it. He did a great job. He's
inspiring guy. And when he spoke to the team, he goes, "Hey, I'm Jeff Choate. I'm the new coach here. What I want to tell you right now is it's all going to be all right. All you guys are nervous right now. You're freaking out. You don't know what's going on. Relax. I've been in your position before. I've been doing this for 30 years. I've built programs. Everyone, relax. I got this." And then he said, "You guys Google me?" And they're all kind of like sitting there sheepishly. He's like, "It's all right. Did you guys Google me? Did you guys talk to friends? Or I'm sure some of you, somebody played for me. You know somebody. You reached out to them. What'd they say about me?" And then one of the guys said that you keep it 100. And he goes, "That's right. I keep it 100. Everything's for real. Everything I do is for you." Like, he was just a totally comfortable, confident guy. No bravado, but confidence. Like,
that's
I've
awesome.
Got this.
Good.
You've got this. And then he got up there. He knew his audience. So Nevada, when they were good under Chris Ault, you know, that was the inventor of the pistol, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So he got up there and he goes, "Here's what we're going to do. We're going to run the ball. We're going to play defense. We're going to have good special teams. We're not going to beat ourselves. That's what we're going to start. And then if we get a bunch of talent, the talent that I intend to go get at quarterback and the skill positions, then we're going to add to that. Does that sound good to everybody?" And all the Nevada fans were like, "Oh, take me now."
Right. So, yeah.
It was pretty good. He was a guy who can read the room.
I don't think I've ever heard him give any type of interviews or anything since he's been at Texas. So, but I mean, just looking at what he's done there with the room that he's in charge of is, I mean, you got to think the guy can coach. And like I said, I was not aware of the success he'd had at Montana State. I knew he was a head coach, but I'll pay attention to the Nevada program from here on out. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it made me want to root for him, and it made me excited that it's the most I'd ever heard him talk. And it made me excited. This is the kind of guy Sark is bringing in, right? Just there's some substance there. He's not a bag man. He's actually teaching the position. He's actually got some substance to him. He actually cares about the guys he coaches. Like, you know, call me old fashioned, but I like that kind of stuff.
So. No, I agree 100%. You have a short list for his replacement, or too early to? He's going to coach the rest of the season, right? That's what I heard.
He's going to coach through the playoffs.
He's coached through, yeah.
So through the national championship, obviously, when we beat
right,
Alabama
when we win.
Again.
When we win, yes.
That's right. Yeah, that's the plan. Now, here's what I think. People think that's magnanimous. I praise Jeff Choate. Here's the downside. He's going to spend the next 3 weeks recruiting Arch Manning to the portal to go to Nevada. And it's pretty sneaky, and I don't like it.
If he does that, it'll be the grossly, the most grossly misused time of his life.
Actually,
hey, did you see that, Paul?
What's
he's
that?
Returning. Somebody reported he's
Arch
returning.
Manning's
I can't remember who it, I can't remember who it was, but one of the things was like Manning to return to Texas. I was like, you people are insufferable.
I don't know if you know this, but if you put the words Arch Manning in your tweet or your article in college football fandom, you 10x whatever your normal views would have been otherwise.
I'm gonna start doing that on change orders at work.
Arch Manning wants you to get
like
this
drywall. Arch Manning would like you to upgrade this brick.
I'm gonna write the Arch Manning post-mortem offense.
I mean, it comes with the territory. Like, I mean, you knew it was coming, but it's just become such a tiresome deal. It's like every day it's like, oh, and then, you know, it's what's he gonna do? And then some guy today, I can't, like I said, I don't remember who it was, but he's coming back. I'm like, oh really? That's cool.
Nice.
Cool. Thanks.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, good stuff.
Good problem to have.
Good problem to have. Hey, I mentioned our sponsor, Gabe Winslow, earlier in the podcast. I want to mention him again, and this time in the context of his profession. We talked about Jeff Choate being at the top of his profession and being rewarded with a head coaching job at Nevada. Gabe Winslow is at the top of his profession. This guy is in the top 0.1% of mortgage brokers in the great state of Texas. Nay, the nation, all the way up to Maine, Randy, all the way up to the Sox AA organization, all the way to the Palouse of Washington. That's how much Gabe's span and power reaches. Pick up the phone, find out why. You can reach him at 832-557-1095. This is a great time to get your ducks in a row. I know it sounds crazy to say that in December, but if you're going to be looking for a house, whether now when inventory is low, but buyers are low, that's actually a great time. Or if you're getting ramped up for the spring and the summer, where we're almost certain interest rates are going to be lower, and they have been getting lower, this is the time to get your ducks in a row. Get your mortgage guy now, get pre-qualified now, and then talk out your strategic plan. Gabe is the guy to do that. Really smart, really strategic. 832-557-1095. And then if you want to go bigger picture, you want to go macro on your financial world, there's a guy who can help you get wealthy. Or if you're already wealthy, he can help preserve, grow, and protect your wealth. Because there's more to just having some money. You got to protect that money. You got to establish legacy. You've got to do things to make sure that that money lasts and that, frankly, you can live out your dreams and not just live out your retirement and dignity, but also prosper. David McClellan is the guy to call. 312-933-8823. He is a fiduciary financial advisor for Forum Financial. He is an absolute expert in his field. He has multiple white papers published that other financial advisors reference when they're advising their clients. I don't know about you, but I kind of like to go to the direct expert and not to the intermediary. Pick up the phone, set up a consultation. Worst thing that can happen, you just spent 30 minutes chatting with a really cool guy who's incredibly smart, who will answer several of your financial questions and give you some great ideas. Best case scenario, you just got a new financial advisor if the two of you think it's a good fit. David ain't desperate. He's going to be evaluating you just as much as you're evaluating him. He's really good at what he does. Call him. Find out why. 312-933-8823. All right, Randy. I've serviced our sponsors. And it's time to service. Yeah, Randy. I
say serviced?
I said service, and I'm now regretting it because Randy's not going to let it slide. He's giving me big raised eyebrows. And you know what, man? Just F off. It's late.
Hey, I will say this. I did take the opportunity to pick Gabe's brain for about 25 minutes on what he thought was about to happen in the industry and this and that. And yeah, he's plugged in. So all y'all, if you're in the market or thinking about it, 15-minute phone call can't hurt. He'll talk about it. I promise you, he'll talk about it.
Awesome, man. I appreciate that. I appreciate that spontaneous and organic endorsement. I didn't know you'd talk to him. So that's awesome. Hey, let's talk about the matchup. Let's talk about Washington. Everyone's looking at this and saying, oh, well, first of all, we got to address, we're not going to get into all the Florida State stuff unless you want to. You know, the thing they do? It's actually,
Over
the last 48 hours. Shut up.
Oh, my God. It's so painful.
Just move on. I get it. Hey, if it happened to Texas, we'd be pissed.
Yes, 100%. I'd be mad, but
you know what? I'd still go to work. I'd go to work the next day. Okay.
It's not changing anything.
I'd still cook dinner for my kid.
Go talk to your conference commissioner if you don't like it.
By the way, you told me this little tidbit.
Yes.
Tell the good people.
The ACC was one of the conferences that kept us from being a 12-team playoff this year. So if you have any problems with it, you can go knock on your conference commissioner's door.
Also, what
and you can also talk to whoever orchestrated the 16-6 snooze fest that I had to watch at night.
Also, Boo Corrigan, the spokesman for the committee. Where is he, the athletic director, Randy?
I believe it's somewhere in the ACC.
NC State.
Yes, that's correct.
So Texas fans think the Big 12 had it in for them, and they do. ACC's got some real resentment issues with the Florida States.
So I 100% think Florida State wants out of there, and I think the ACC knows that they want out of there. And, I don't think there's any favors done to them.
No, probably not. But also, the worst favor that was done to them is Jordan Travis broke his leg.
Yeah.
We had to watch what they trotted out in replacement, and it wasn't good.
So I mean, let's flip the tables here. Let's say that Ewers gets hurt 2 weeks ago, and he's done. Like, as a Texas fan, you have enough wherewithal about you to understand that. Come on, like, be intelligent. Like, you're not the same team.
Right.
You can be pissed. I get it. But, like, this sob fest and complaining spree that they've been on for the last 3 days is just, I mean, it's driving me nuts. And I'm not even in, I can't even imagine being in, like, Florida with Florida radio. And,
you know, yeah.
I don't, like, I basically refuse to look at any Danny Cannell tweet because, like, Lord knows what he's doing.
Oh, my God.
Well, so, anyway.
On the other side of the Florida lament, there was Michigan horror. Did you see their live reaction, Randy?
They didn't seem too excited about playing Bama. Let's put it that way.
Those dudes thought they were going to get a bye into the title game.
There was a guy in the back. I don't know if you can see it. I'm pretty sure he threw a water bottle.
That's like, awesome. Like, but that also, if I'm a Bama player and I'm the Bama coaches,
that's, yeah, absolutely,
that thing's playing on a freaking loop. These guys absolutely don't want any part of us. And based on that reaction, they don't.
I think Harbaugh will have him ready to play. But, yeah, the reaction was definitely, hey, we think we got this made. You know, we're going to cakewalk into the final. And, oh, we got work to do.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. You asked me whether I'd rather play Washington or Michigan in the first round.
I don't even think it's a question.
I'll take Michigan.
Yeah.
I mean, Washington's got those dudes and freaking Penix. And they're healthy, Randy. They look like the Washington from September that was just murdering people.
Absolutely. I'll take my chances against J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah. That said,
Washington, they're not a bad football team. Don't get me wrong.
No.
But right now, after watching the Washington-Oregon game, which I told you Washington was going to win, by the way.
You did.
Yeah, if you give me a choice between the two, I'd rather play Michigan, but you get past Washington, you let those two beat up on each other and see what happens.
That's the other part. Michigan didn't get a bye, and that's very powerful, right? Because Michigan, Alabama, and Texas, all very physical, and there's a tax to be paid. Also, these championship games are week separated by a week. In the past, they've been separated by as many as 10 days. I think one time it was 2 weeks, wasn't it?
Almost. Yeah, I think it was okay. Like a Friday to Saturday or Friday to Monday, yeah, type thing. Yeah.
So that's a big deal. I mean, that does something to you. So, look, make no mistake, Texas is going to be a different kind of battle. It's going to be a whiteboard battle. It's going to be a test of the minds of the Texas players as much as the ability and physicality and recognition. But it's going to be a hell of a game. I'm excited. I've already seen some fans who are doing the, we're going to boat race Washington. Hey, man, we're in a tournament now. There's no more style points.
Don't matter.
We're trying to win by a point twice. That's it.
Absolutely. Trophy doesn't say any different.
That's it.
It's the Washington game is going to be more physical than what people are originally thinking. I'm not saying you. Like, I think there's going to be a point of attack at the line of scrimmage to where, I mean, if you watch the Washington Oregon game, like their defensive line dominated Oregon. And I think there's some things that we can do on both sides of the ball to exploit them. And what I would do exactly, one of which we've been talking about since the beginning of the season. But it's not going to be played wide open. Like, there's going to be an element of physicality to it, but defending space and defending space well is going to be the answer to the team that wins this game.
And for Texas, attacking space and creating space on the other end, because Washington's defense is well coordinated. They're well disciplined.
Yep.
They only got like one identifiable clear NFL dude.
I think their two interior guys are really good.
Yeah, they're squatty. They're like run stoppers. I don't think they're pass rushers.
No.
And their secondary, it's not Oklahoma State, so let's be clear about that. But they're not on the higher end of the pure athletic scale. They're going to zone you. They're going to try to make you make throws. And I feel like Texas can handle that. And I feel like Sark, with a month to scheme, he's going to have something for him. Just like DeBoer, with a month to scheme, he's going to have something for us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But no, I think we need to attack the edges. I think they're going to try to attack the edges, and we need to formulate a game plan to funnel to the middle in the run game. That's what I'm talking about. Pass game, find space, get your playmakers the ball. You're going to have to make some hard completions into some tighter windows, but I don't think it's anything that we're ill prepared to do. You just got to go execute it. We have the play. I mean, everybody's going to the talking point going into this game is going to be how good their wide receiving core is, right?
Yep.
Ours is pretty damn good.
Yeah. Healthy Jatavion Sanders, not to be underestimated. Xavier Worthy, is he going to be 100% by the time this game rolls around?
All I saw was negative x-rays. I didn't hear anything else about what it was.
So
I would assume that's a good thing, but I don't know what his diagnosis is.
So Sark had the post-game presser. They asked him about it. He said Xavier Worthy is going to be good, which is what he should say, even if Xavier Worthy is going to be out. Right?
Right.
So I don't know. The concern is if it's a high ankle sprain, you're not good to go in 4 weeks, typically. But Xavier Worthy might also be from the Vince Young group of athletes that heal in 9 minutes, where we recover in 9 days.
Well, he's been carried to the locker room 7 times in the last 2 weeks. Yeah. He's come out.
He's James Brown.
So I think he's from a school. But yeah, I don't know what it was. It didn't look like he got rolled up on or twisted. It looked like maybe he just got landed on his leg in the game. So I didn't get a real good look at it or whatever. But I don't think it's a high ankle sprain. I hope it's not. But I don't. We'll find out. But I mean, yes, he's a key component to our game plan. That's for sure.
Do you remember James Brown, the entertainer, not the Longhorn quarterback?
The R&B guy.
I feel good.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So his shtick was he's performing. He's giving everything he can. He's dancing, and then his entourage comes out and they beg him to stop, because he's going to die if he keeps going, right? And then he consents to it, and they put a cape on him, and they are leading him off the stage, and then he'll throw the cape off, and then he runs back out and does an encore, and they're like, no, James, no, don't go back. You're going to die, James. He's like, I have to do it for the people. No, James, don't. It's like a big to-do, right? Have you ever seen the – okay, it's awesome.
No, no, I missed out on that one. But
I feel like that's Xavier Worthy. I feel like he's going off on crutches, and then he comes back and runs 30 yards and trucks a guy on the side.
Everybody needs a little Willis Reed to him. It's fine.
That's right. Did you what side of the stadium were you on when Xavier put the pop on the Cowboy safety?
I was opposite the end zone. We were basically right on the end zone, but I was on the opposite side of the stadium. And that dude had no idea that he was about to get trucked right there. He was waiting for a little frail wide receiver to run out of bounds at the two, and which, by the way, was a terrible spot on that play.
Yeah.
A couple calls in that game. But, yeah, he was like, oh, this dude's going to run out of bounds. And I just got flattened.
So I have a buddy that was on the other side right on that pylon, low seats. And he said all you heard was pop, like a gunshot. And then you heard this shrill voice yell out, bitch.
That's awesome.
Tell them about Fresno. Fresno doesn't run out of bounds.
Fresno didn't run out of bounds. Yep.
Yep. Pretty good stuff, man.
It's been a couple days in Fresno. It's a, yeah. You understand very quickly why the people that come out of that place are pretty tough.
Yeah. Not a soft place. It's people no. Envision California as all sunshine and beaches and soft people. And yeah, go spend some time in Stockton, Oakland, Fresno. You'll get a balanced opinion. Bakersfield. Yeah. You know, there's a different vibe there. But yeah, it's not all San Francisco and Malibu.
Yeah, no, I got a good buddy from there that I played with, and I texted him the first night we were there. We were in a hotel right next to a little small casino, and yeah, walking around outside at night was interesting. I texted him, was like, "Your hometown's a little interesting." He goes, "Oh, it's a shithole." I was like, "You said it, I didn't." But yeah, you can understand why people from there have a little bit of an edge.
It's no Rockport.
Nah, y'all are way too fancy
The
for
Beverly
everybody here.
Hills of the Texas coastline.
That's right. That's right.
All right. Hey, are there any thoughts that you have on any of these bowls? And how
There's
cool is
some
it?
in
How cool
there's
is
some
it? So talk about rich man, poor man. Adam Carolla used to do a bit called Rich Man, Poor Man. And the joke was really rich people and really poor people have a lot of similarities. Like one of them is outdoor showers. Right? Right?
Everything comes full circle.
Or owning 19 cars. It's just that a poor man, all of his are on blocks and it's all in pieces and
Also
it's in his yard.
true.
Right? So the rich man, poor man for bowls is it's nice to not be in a bowl. Usually, Texas fans are like, it's a tragedy if you're not in a bowl because we're accustomed to the 8 and 5, 9 and 4s of the Tom Herman era. And it's kind of nice not to be in a bowl.
Very nice. Very nice indeed. Man, I feel like they missed on some very good opportunities for matchups.
Such as
I mean, I get why they did it, but I mean, I feel like the Oregon Liberty game is, yeah.
they had to
Like,
do a G5, right?
I know, but
Hey, what a
they should have given Florida State the G5 and just completely screwed
oh God,
them.
what about the Orange Bowl? Florida State versus Georgia, should they rechristen it the Wine Bowl?
So a buddy of mine, he texted me about this, whatever, like, this is why we needed a bigger playoff. No, Georgia was in the playoff. It started a week early. Like you had a playoff game, you lost it, and you're out. Florida State sort of had one. They look like crap, and that's what got them thrown out. But Georgia had every opportunity to be in the playoff. They lost the game that should have got them in there. But yes, no, that game's going to turn into wants to be there more, how many people are opting out of this thing.
Hey, you know a
I don't know.
great betting opportunity?
Under.
No. Yes, for sure. But broadly, the Cotton Bowl, Missouri, Ohio State, the Missouri opt-outs are zero. The Ohio State opt-outs are going to be plentiful.
They had 17 people enter the portal today,
Yeah, and the portal is full of
including
Ohio State players, including their quarterback.
starting quarterback, like everybody. No, Missouri's going to win that game, probably
Yeah, I
handily.
mean, and also the want to part. Ryan Day's feeling out NFL franchises right now.
No, Ryan Day wants out of there.
Yeah, and Missouri, they're real fired up at the idea of going and laying it down on one of the blue blood programs of college football. So
Absolutely.
motivation always relevant in bowls. It's why armed service academies are 70% winners in bowl games. They're happy to be there. They're off their prison of a campus. They're excited. They're staying in a hotel and
Yeah,
they don't get
absolutely.
to opt out. There's no opting out. So I think that's, who wants to be there always matters. One that kind of, oh, Caleb Williams, as you saw, not playing for USC.
Shocked.
Shocker. He seems like a selfless guy.
I'm so ready for that guy to be in the NFL.
He'll probably be good.
Probably. That's fine.
We've got let's see.
Got Boston College, SMU.
Yeah, we got Iowa versus
Arizona.
Tennessee.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Iowa, Tennessee. That is going to be an inept.
Oh, man.
Every Tennessee loss they've had is by double digits. And Iowa, I mean, did you see what Fat Boy did? He was unreal. You still think he's not fat now that you've been able to see him live?
I mean, he weighs less than me, so I can't call him fat. So.
I don't think his roster listing is accurate, dude.
Maybe not.
I don't think he's 250. I don't think maybe he's seen not. 250 in a while.
Arizona's going to beat Oklahoma.
Arizona's going to beat Dylan Gabriel, of course, has hit the portal.
Notre Dame's going to beat Oregon State, and nobody's going to care.
Here's why. Yeah. Here's why.
They're going to beat them.
Listen to me. Hartman may opt out, and Notre Dame had no healthy receivers, and the ones that are healthy are all in the portal, except like two guys.
Yeah, okay.
And it's the Sun Bowl.
Hey.
So you never know who gets arrested in Juarez Thursday night.
Oregon State may get better at quarterback.
They may get better at quarterback. But that, unfortunately, their backup quarterback, Aiden Childs, who's supposed to be like the phenom successor, he is going to go in the portal and probably go to Michigan State. So Oregon State's third string quarterback, I'm going to guess, not a stud. But yeah, pretty interesting stuff, man.
Nice. Some guy from like Western Canada.
Yeah.
Just waiting in the wings. He's going to light it up.
Are you going to be riveted to see?
Man, this is kind of a blah slate.
There's some little random games that.
Yes. Whatever.
UCF, Georgia Tech. I'll watch that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to watch them all.
I'll watch all this garbage. Yeah, Who am I kidding?
A&M, Oklahoma State.
Hey, talk about ugly. Miami, Rutgers in December in New York, in the Yankee Stadium. Miami is going to have, remember their backup broke his arm, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Van Dime is going to be sitting out or portaling, right? Did it happen?
Get a random...
Oh, my graphics are ticking in again. Damn it. Oh, like when I do
Paul's an Aggie fan. He's got thumbs up all over the place. God. And he's wearing a maroon shirt. Goodness gracious.
I am wearing a maroon shirt. I'm matching your wardrobe, Randy.
This is a Team SU Toronto Blue Jays thing that I stole fair and square. Thank you very much.
How much equipment do you estimate you stole in college and pros combined? Put a dollar value on it.
Stole
is a strong word. Borrowed and have it returned.
Not very much.
Not much. But like the jerseys.
They took care of it. They took care of us pretty good.
Practice shorts that fit nice, you like. You kind of slipped them in your bag.
We got to keep all that.
That's oh, you fine. Did?
We got to keep all that.
All right.
There's a couple things that we probably weren't supposed to keep that may have ended up in the bottom of my bag. It's all right.
All right.
We'll get over it.
I got it. Got to eat.
They get a large media conglomerate owning their organization. They can afford a couple pairs of socks.
Are you sad you missed the NIL decade?
Man, I don't know. It was hard enough to keep up with everything that I had to keep up with when I was in school. I don't know if I could have probably got a real sweet deal from Crossroads Bank or something here in town.
Frost Bank.
We don't have Frost Bank here.
Torchies.
There's one down the road. I was in Torchies enough.
Do you know that I have a Torchies a mile from my house?
How many times do you eat there?
Oh, I go there every week.
Eat the Democrat every day?
Love the Democrat. Love the Wrangler. I like the Republican and the Democrat. So look at that.
No, they're both good. They're both good.
I like the Wrangler. I like just their breakfast tacos. They make a good breakfast.
No, they got good. They got that's legit food. I mean, for a place that's quote unquote, whatever you want to call it, hot spot. It's actually really good.
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think I've told you before. Austin eateries dominate Colorado Springs, which is why my buddy that runs Pinkerton's Barbecue. I
Trying to get him
randomly,
up there?
I randomly text him every other day just to be like, "Hey man, the barbecue up here is terrible."
Well, just tell him to make a trip up there from February 4th to February 10th and stake out somewhere over around Vail.
Ah, you're heading up to Vail?
Beaver Creek, actually, but
Oh, nice. Are you gonna be skiing?
probably. I don't know. I didn't grow up skiing. My family has a good friend that has a house over there, and we went last year. It was a lot of fun. I like it. I'm just not as mad at skiing as everybody else is. I enjoy it, but I'm not very good at it for one, and I'm good to like go to the top of the mountain and take like the easiest trail down,
Yeah.
and then have a couple Bloody Marys or beer, and then just wait for everybody else and be like, "Hey man, my skiing day was great."
Well,
They're
plus
like
you're
doing double blacks and everything coming down like 15 times. I'm like, that's too much work.
well, you're also in the phase where snow is fun and beautiful, and I view snow as an irritant, right? And you're like, it's snow. Oh, this is great. Let's make a snowman.
Yeah, no, I've never really been there. I like chilly weather, but yeah, the snow just gets gross and nasty, whatever. But I enjoy the mountains and a little bit of skiing. Like I said, I'm not as mad at it as a lot of people are.
Y'all
But no, yeah,
flying or
you need to
driving?
get, what's that?
Flying or driving?
Oh, we'll fly, I'm sure.
It's only 16 hours, man.
I drive. I don't mind. I mean, I drive enough. I enjoy a little drive time, but yeah, we'll fly in and then drive over.
Are you going to try to go to the game in New Orleans?
I don't know. We have a wedding to go to on New Year's Eve. That'd be a tough turnaround. I don't know. I may hedge my bets and try to hold out for a potential Houston trip. I don't know. We'll see.
Nice.
We're thinking. Or I say we're thinking. I'm thinking.
People who schedule fall weddings are evil and selfish, but if you schedule a winter wedding, you can't fully hold it against someone because we're not used to playing games in January that matter, right?
Yes. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
But in 3 years, you better cut that crap out. And I know everything's cheaper for January wedding and all that. Just put it in February.
So we got married on November 30th,
Ooh.
after the A&M series ended. And happy 11th anniversary next year. Guess I know what we're doing.
Oh yeah. You're gonna be behind enemy lines.
Yeah, we will be, or I will be.
You will be.
We won't be. I will be.
Yeah, there's gonna not there's no we.
I have good memories of the last time I was there, so.
No doubt. No doubt about that, man. That's awesome. Hey, Aggies, any other Schadenfreude we need to hit on before we move out of here? Say goodbye to
I
the
didn't hear
people.
anything other than Robinson moving on. I guess he's bringing Santucci from Duke. Any word on OC?
No word yet that's definitive. I think the bigger concern for the Aggies is that which was built by Bags in the portal is being lost by Bags in the portal.
Trying to hang on to it.
And
I'll
they're
be
trying to hang
interested.
on. So I honestly think if you want to make the pro A&M argument for the moment, not to panic, is what's the easiest thing you can do as an A&M player to up your price of staying? Enter the portal. Right?
And perform well.
And be Walter Nolan. Don't be, a scrub.
Right.
Evan Stewart, I would think is gone, but the fact that he's not gone yet tells me maybe people aren't eager to pay the price he thinks he's worth. So
Well, that's a whole nother aspect of this whole thing too, right? I mean, I think we've actually talked about this on here before. It's like, I mean, I paid X for my house, so my house is worth X.
yeah.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. How a thing is worth what someone will pay you for.
It's absolutely.
Yeah.
So, hey, if you got whatever money to go to A&M and you thought you could do better and you're out, and then all of a sudden, oh, hey, maybe it's not that good. And it's another thing we've talked about. Like, this thing's going to return to the mean a little bit. Like, I think people with the money are going to realize what the ROI really is on this stuff. There are certain positions and certain players that are probably worth a extraordinary amount of money. There are some other ones that are, yeah, okay, we'll just go get the next best guy, and it's really not that much. So, like I said, that data point will come out, and this will regress the mean a little bit.
Yeah, the problem that you have at the portal, because there's no rules governing this, I mean, it's not even, people call it free agency. Free agency has very strict rules.
Yes.
And once, by the way, you're a free agent who signs, you're no longer a free agent. You don't just get to say you're dissatisfied and jump in the portal again, right? But the one thing you are is you're at the mercy of your dumbest competitor. So you might have a solid starting guard. You like him. He's a two-year starter. You're counting on him. And some moron decides to 3X him. You can't match it. So you just lose that guy.
And those people are out there.
And they're abundant. And there's no rules governing it. So that's a tough deal. I know it's more likely, I mentioned offensive line, it's more likely to happen at the sexy skill positions, right? Mm,
true.
But it's a way that just degrades your program. That's really frustrating. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, does NIL deplete the Georgias a little bit? Because they can target solid guys that you can't match because, you know, they have that five-star glow about them that people want to bring in their program.
I think the allure of the NFL and, hey, we put people in the league will always trump this.
It should, because it's a lot more money.
But you also have to have somebody or somebody in their camp willing to play the long game.
Yeah.
Which now it's not really that long of a game. I mean, you know, redshirt 2 years, boom. That's the way it should work. But I don't know, I've been, from the beginning of this whole thing, I've been pretty consistent. And hey, you want to keep your scholarship? Okay, you can do the $5,000 appearance at Chick-fil-A, and you can go do the $10,000 appearance here, and that's great. But as soon as you start taking money from these collectives or whatever, your scholarship goes away, and you're a professional.
Yeah,
that's the two avenues. Take your pick. I'm not saying one's wrong or one's not. That's kind of where I've been on it from the beginning. And I don't, as somebody that obviously played a sport where full scholarships were not prevalent, that's just where I land on it. I mean, I don't think you should get a fully paid scholarship, your stipend, your housing money, your food money, and be able to hold somebody hostage for another 40 grand.
As the great,
or whatever it is, you know.
As the great philosopher Cardale Jones once said, we ain't here to play school.
What's Cardale Jones doing now?
Nah, that's part of the problem. He might have should have played a little more school, but yeah, that's a good point.
Nah, he's probably more successful than I am. I'm just saying that.
Yeah. Cardale Jones is probably getting a PhD at Oxford right now.
Is he the quarterback's coach at FAU?
I don't know what he does. I have no idea.
No, I really don't know. I figured you would know that.
He might. I'm on the Cardale Jones Facebook fan club.
You're such a Tom Herman guy. I figured you'd, you know, keep up with all those guys.
Yeah, I'm a big Tom Herman guy. No doubt about that. I've always loved Tom. That's my rep. Oh, that's awesome. Well, on that note, on that slander, we're going to say goodnight to you folks. Times are good in Austin, Texas. Times are good in the great state of Texas. Times are good to be a Longhorn. And if you're feeling generous in this time of giving, if you like having good players.
My address is
Randy's address at Yoakum. It'll arrive by pony in 4 days. I appreciate all of you guys contributing to Longhorn Foundation. I appreciate all you guys who do stuff for capital projects. If you're a big cigar, the players on the field, that product, it's paid for by three letters, NIL, and that's the new world. So
yeah, get over the Texas One Fun.
Get over the Texas One Fun. And you'd be surprised that this 12-1 team, it wasn't just built on good intentions and love. So
absolutely.
In this time of portal season and giving. Anyway, for Randy Boone, I am Paul Wadlington saying, hook 'em.
Hook 'em.